Welcome to Listen to Older Voices, a program produced for Uniting Melba and podcast through the Toorak Times. It's always a pleasure to bring you, through their stories, the life and times of older people in our community. All very interesting, all very different, and all very entertaining. Rob Greaves here, and it's great to have you join me on this final program featuring the story of Simon Allsop. Simon was born in 1947. He overcame bullying at school to gain an engineering degree, which led to him having various jobs except in engineering. Simon is well-read, well-travelled, and his story has largely focused on the stroke he suffered in later years and how, through determination and work, he has continued to regain as much of his normal life as possible. This week we learned something of the success of his son, both in Australia and the USA. We also learn how Simon has become very lonely after separating from his first wife and how he met and connected with Brenda, who he has now married. What is uplifting is further stories of his dealing with his stroke and how he was nominated for a Premier's Award in the disability sector, where he was the only single person to make the shortlist. Simon's story is a great story, full of achievements, entertainment, and it's uplifting as it's the story of a man who's lived a full life, had a debilitating stroke, and with great determination and help has managed to regain a life that at least has some normality. We pick up now with Simon talking about his son.
So he realised that all their footballer clubs had 20 players on their list or more, 22 or something, and they were all receiving social media tweets and they all had Facebook accounts, and they were sportsmen. None of them knew how to tweet, how to use Twitter. It's, I don't know if you know, but it's really quite a skillful thing. There's very, very small number of letters and words you can use. You've got to know what you're doing. And at the time, there was a lot of scandal in newspapers about sportsmen tweeting inappropriate things. So Anthony, I brought him up right to barrack for Essendon. So he went to the Essendon Football Club and said, "Who does all your tweets and Facebook responses? I would like to do that for you." And Essendon said, "We need someone like that, but we haven't got any budget." So he said, "Don't worry, I'll volunteer." So he started working for nothing for the Essendon Football Club. He worked for the marketing manager. The Essendon Football Club also offered game time tweets about how games were going on game day. So Anthony would go to the game with the boys in the plane, were the days when Essendon could afford the extra ticket, which was most days, and he would run out onto the field with the boys, peel off and go and sit on the bench, pull out his trusty computer and start tweeting. He knew all the team on a first-name basis.
Well, he
would say to them, "Show, what tweets have you got? How do you want to respond?"
Yeah.
And he would do the tweeting. So he knew every player on a first-name basis. Many kids would have given their eye teeth for that job.
Mm.
Or not so much kids, but young men.
Mm. But again, I come to that question. Was it only initially he was working free? Did they eventually make it a paid job? So how did he earn his living?
Well, he didn't have many expenses. I wasn't charging him for living.
Oh, okay. He's still living at home with Dad.
Still living at home with Dad. Yes.
Of course.
And then one day the marketing manager came into work and said, "I've been approached by the Richmond Football Club and they want what we've got here and they will pay." So Anthony said, "See you later, Essendon." And went to work doing exactly the same job at Richmond.
Right.
Where he met a whole new group of players. And he said in the end he preferred the Richmond ones. Partly because the coach was pretty good. He was a digital marketing manager.
Right.
At Richmond. And he worked on their homepage and things. Then, while he was between jobs, he had worked out that nobody in Melbourne and Australia knew how to use social media to help your sporting club, to put bums on seats for your events. So he hired a room at the MCG and held his own conference.
Right.
And because he was watching the NBA religiously, he knew that the Phoenix Suns were the team that were most into
social media.
So he rang up the IT manager of the Phoenix Suns and said, "Would you like a free trip to Australia? All you got to do is talk about your job at half an hour and be the lead speaker at my conference." So the IT manager said, "Yes, please." And he turned up, and Anthony, he became firm friends. He sold out, didn't charge enough, didn't make his millions, but he made enough to seat a second conference.
Right.
So he did it again. And the IT manager from the Phoenix Suns came over again. They became really, really good friends. And then Anthony saw a job for a digital marketing manager based in New York for the NBA. He said to me as he left, I've got to make this job last 2 years. My CV has my jobs. While I was at uni, I was on the front desk at Cotton On, and he had worked for Vodafone, but these were only university-type jobs.
Yes.
So he said, I've got to make this job last so that my CV looks reasonable.
No, fair enough.
Out he went through the double doors of Tullamarine Airport off to New York. He really loved New York. He found the Australian Bar, where he could sit up all night and watch either the cricket or whatever footy was on, depending on the time of year, cuddling a VB, which he quite liked.
What's happening currently? What's the story from New York?
Well, I knew he'd be coming home when the 2 years were up. He had to find a job in Australia.
Yes.
He Skyped looking for jobs. Well, he looked for jobs on the internet, and then he did Skype interviews. He found a job with Channel 7 in Melbourne.
Right.
But it wasn't just a job. It was the job was an executive producer for the 7 Network, majoring in sport and IT. So he came home as an executive producer for the 7 Network.
Boy,
wow.
He falls on his feet, doesn't he?
Yeah. Well, he works hard at it.
Yeah, okay. Yes, that's right. Things don't...
I told him to believe in himself when he left for New York.
Can you bottle that belief and sell it?
Yeah. Because and when the Olympic Games were on, there was lots of sport. And 7 had, I forget the exact, let's say it was 32 live feeds coming in from Rio. And only 3 free-to-air channels to put them on.
Right. So what choice does
he and his staff wrote an app. And the app said, tell us the sport you want. We'll record it off for you on your phone. And you can see it then. So they made use of all the channels coming in that way.
So people could personalise their experience.
Yes. And then all the sport was over. And the next sport is at the Gold Coast.
Yeah, that's not
hasn't happened yet.
No.
So 7 downsized his job.
Right.
And they downsized his salary.
Of course.
He was being paid far too much. But nevertheless, he was became attached to it.
And he's still working there now?
No. He decided that he didn't like his salary being downsized. It was time to find another job. The job he found was as a general manager for the Brisbane Lions.
Oh, okay.
He's a general manager for communication with the Brisbane Lions. So his office is in the Gabba.
He gets around this boy, doesn't he?
While he was with 7, he had a bit too much money, and his financial advisor said, the only city, Australian city, which hasn't had a housing boom is Brisbane. It's waiting to happen. Buy some houses on accommodation in Brisbane with your spare money. So he did. He now owns a unit in Brisbane, and one still on the plan. But the unit in Brisbane has got someone in it and is earning him money. So he actually lives in rented apartments down the road from the Yagaba when he's working.
Yeah. So he's setting himself up nicely for the future, isn't he?
I asked him about his super. He said, it's the house.
Well, that's right. Exactly.
Well, nothing wrong with that.
No, nothing wrong with that indeed.
And you've tuned into Listen to Older Voices. Turning Back Time. Turning Back Time. Turning Back Time. Turning Back Time. Turning Back Time.
You must have felt a little bit lonely after he'd gone, because he'd been
absolutely
around for a while.
Loneliness is one of the things I have really suffered from.
Yes. So how did you transfer that loneliness to meeting Brenda? How did that happen?
Well, I needed a lady. I was divorced. I didn't know where to go to look for a lady, so I looked on the internet. And Brenda was on the internet. And her webpage said she lived on the peninsula. And I thought, I know about the peninsula.
Sure
I can deal with that.
Yes.
So I rang her up and suggested that we, emailed her rather, because the phone number wasn't on the page.
Of course.
And suggested that we meet at the Mordialloc pub, where it's got a lovely, nice bistro.
Yeah.
And we did.
And from there it just fired.
I knew straight away she would be the lady for me.
Funny how that can happen.
Yeah, she had an English background, so that fitted in nicely too.
Yes.
She comes from Leicester. Her family lived in Leicester. And they moved to Carrum.
Right.
Just after the war. She came out here as a three-year-old. So she's essentially an Australian.
Yes, yes.
And she has three lovely girls. She's a family lady. Just ticked all my boxes.
Ticked all your boxes. Yeah. And obviously, if I can put it this way, you ticked, if not all, most of her boxes then.
Yes. So
because it has to be a two-way thing, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yes. So how did the family, how did your son and daughter feel about it?
Well, they had already refused one of the ladies I've tried to take out. They made it very uncomfortable. And this time, they liked her. So we'd been down that track.
Yes, yes. Because that is a difficult, can be a difficult thing.
You can't, and it's very important to involve your kids.
Yes, yes. And how do you get on with Brenda's daughters?
Very well.
So it's a real win-win.
It's a win-win, yes.
Yeah.
I hope you can believe how happy I am.
Sometimes, unfortunately,
I don't make Brenda as happy as I'd like. But I'm working on that best I can.
I think that that's all any human being can do is to be aware of what, if I can call them, shortcomings, and to be prepared to work on them. I mean, whether we achieve our goals or not, only time tells. But there are so many people out there, I think, who are not even aware of their, you know, things that need to be improved. So I think you're ahead of the pack, if I can put it that way.
Well, thank you.
It's been a fairly topsy-turvy life up to now, hasn't it? I mean, you've had some real highs and some real lows.
And at Royal Talbot, I was there for almost a year. They got me better. When I arrived from hospital, I was a wreck. Couldn't do anything.
I bet you were.
Complete wreck. When I left Royal Talbot, when my funding ran out, I think it was, I could function like I can now. And I felt I owed Royal Talbot lots. So I volunteered in the library. On the way to the library, I walked through the stroke ward where I'd been for a year, said hello to all the people there that just had their strokes. And because of that, some of the guys helped me put myself up for the Premier's award in the disability sector. And I got on the shortlist.
That is an achievement. That is a huge achievement.
I thought I'd won, but
well, you did win. No, you did win.
That's what I thought.
I think you did.
Everybody else was a team. I got to go to the lunch at Birramung Ma under Federation Square by the arrow there.
Yes.
All the other winners were teams of people.
Yes.
I was the only single person.
I think even to get into that is a win.
Yes.
I mean, it really is. It's a win for you personally, but it's also a win for people with strokes, isn't it?
Mm.
Because we've mentioned it a few times that it's a difficult journey, it's a complex journey, it must be a very trying journey.
Well, I think I'm the most positive person you've ever met.
Well, you are an amazing person. I mean, you are very vital, if I can put it that way.
Well, know? I happened to go to Royal Talbot for an appointment with my leg brace. I called in to see some of the people who I had seen when I was there, and they told me they were very impressed with my, just what you said.
Vitality, yes.
I had decided I wanted to travel. I wasn't going to let the stroke put me off travelling. When we were in London, we bought a...
Sorry, is this you and Brenda? Or
me and Christine.
Christine before, yeah.
Bought a comma van outside Australia House, as you used to do in those days.
Yes, that's where you bought and sold, yeah.
We would take it across on the hovercraft whenever we ran out of patisseries. So I got used to driving around France, and gradually we would go further. And first of all, we just went to Calais or Boulogne, depending where the hovercraft went.
Yeah.
And then gradually we went further and further. Yes. So I was used to driving around France. I knew if I had someone who could do the driving, I could sit in the passenger seat. That would be all right. But nobody else thought anybody with a stroke could do travelling.
So have you managed to travel since?
Yes. Now I'm getting older. And my body's getting harder to walk around. It's more important to have the right shower than it was, and the right toilet.
Look, there are going to be a lot of people listening who have either got people in their family who have had strokes or have had little experience with it. So can you just enlarge why that's so important and what it is that's important?
Well, I had been very lonely and I wasn't housebound. I eventually had got my licence back. I could drive. But travelling was such an important part of what I'd done as a younger man. I wanted to travel, and I knew I could travel around France if I had a driver. So I put up words on the notice on the, we're all told what notice board, asking if any nurses would like to be a driver. But they all thought the wrong thing.
Of course.
And nobody volunteered. Finally, my daughter said she'd like to do it for me. So I modified the trip I had planned, reduced it down so I could afford to pay for her airfare, because she couldn't. And she had a French boyfriend at that stage, so we went, who came from Brittany. So we made a beeline for Brittany and met up with the boyfriend's parents.
How wonderful was that?
It was wonderful for some other reason altogether. He had exactly the same job as my dad. He was an engineer in a firm of architects.
Connection.
And he took us around to one of the building sites that he was, that his company was working on. And the engineer pops in unexpectedly to building sites to double check to make sure everything is going all right before the concrete dries. And my dad used to, in the school holidays, take me out. We would go to the peaches or something, but on the way we'd go to his, one of his jobs, and I'd wait in the car while he went out
and inspected,
the buildings.
Yeah.
And we did just that with Catherine's partner's friend, Dad.
Right.
I felt so much at home.
I bet you did. I bet you did.
Let's Ronan, his name. I can't pronounce the R's the way the French.
The French can. No,
yes.
No, unless you're French, you can't. Well, let's bring ourselves up to date. When I first met you this morning, you mentioned that even now you're still working on improving yourself, you know, dealing with the stroke.
Well, unless I stay fit, my body collapses.
So it's an imperative almost.
It's an imperative. So I've got a personal trainer.
Right.
And I do stay on your fit classes with, we used to live in Mount Eliza, now I'm living in Frankston.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still going to the Mornington stay on your feet class.
What does that consist of?
Just, well, because I can't stand up.
No, easily. So what?
Chair-based exercises.
Chair-based exercises,
yes.
Right.
But it's enough, and it's not enough to keep me properly fit. But the lady who runs the class is also a trained personal trainer.
Right.
So I asked her, we got on very well. She laughs at my jokes. And sometimes they're against her. And we are good friends. And she agreed to take me on as a personal trainer back through the Shire of Mornington.
Right.
So, although I'm living in Frankston City, I'm still with the Shire.
Right.
And I get a personal training session a week, plus the stay on your feet class. And that is keeping me much fitter. I'm finding walking is harder.
Yes.
In fact, I went to St John of God Rehabilitation Hospital to improve my walking. I didn't know whether I had developed bad habits or was just unfit. And I knew the physios at St John of God could work it out. And they did, and I improved a lot. And one day the OT said, let me walk you to the car, Simon. She looked at my car. I'm insured with AAMI. Every scratch has an excess, attracts an excess of $800. So I've left all the scratches there.
Of course.
Until the big bang comes, when all the little scratches don't matter.
No.
I haven't had the big bang because I can reasonably drive. So she wrote to my GP and said, Simon needs to do the Vic Roads test because his car is a wreck. So I had already done a Vic Roads test to get my license in the first place after the stroke. I knew I could drive well enough.
Yeah.
So, but the GP had no choice. Once you get, GP gets a letter from OT saying that you've got to go do a test, he's bound to tell Vic Roads. So he did that, and Vic Roads, I made an appointment with Vic Roads and did a driving test with him a few weeks ago. I passed.
I am relieved to hear it.
My kids won't drive with me. And now I'm saying to them, I've just passed the test.
Hey, more recently than they have.
Thank you for that line. I'll remember that.
That's right.
But I'm still not perfect because I have cognition issues, red lights, green lights. I was parked on Warragul Road and Riversdale Avenue. Riversdale Road.
I do.
It's on a hill.
Yes, I do.
And I was the first car facing Riversdale Road. The tram went by, and another car zoomed across at great speed, bounced into the air, didn't hit a tram, but stayed on the road.
Wow.
Against the red light.
Against the light, too?
Yes.
Okay.
Lucky he lived.
Yes, I reckon.
I watched this and I got shocked. So I tend to stop at green lights to make sure nothing's coming.
Oh, okay. That can be a problem, though.
Stopping at green lights is not recommended.
No, it can be a problem. But I can understand. On one hand, I understand how that has occurred. But yes, that does bring about a whole range of other problems.
Mm. And I find when I get tired, it's very hard to stay in the right lane, the correct lane. I weave from lane to lane. I have sleep apnea, so I stop when I'm driving home, for example, from Kew, when I go to Royal Talbot or go to Doncaster Shopping Town. I have a sleep on the side of the road, which I can do, and I wake up much, much more refreshed.
Okay.
And you've tuned into Listen to Older Voices, promoting positive aging.
Because that's quite a drive. I mean, it's not just down the road.
Well, no. When I lived in Bourne, I used to go to Shopping Town. It's a nice place to go. And I knew all the staff there. And I was with DoCare, and DoCare used to bring a bus every Monday morning. Every second Monday morning, it was only once a fortnight, to my house and take me out to lunch. And there was another group as well called BASS, Boorundara AIDS Support Services, that also had a bus and also took their people on their list out to lunch. The guys who ran the two groups knew each other, so they staggered the lunches so that every Monday you'd have a bus turn up to take you to a lunch. Oh. And it'd be different groups every second Monday.
Great.
And we, DoCare, were more adventurous. They would go out as far as Daylesford for lunch. Any hotel that had a seniors, reasonable food with a seniors menu was...
Fair game.
Fair game, that's the right phrase. But the other group always went to the Manhattan Hotel in Canterbury Road, which has also got a good place, good food.
But it's the same place all the time.
But the food was good, I didn't mind.
Didn't mind.
Been going out with Wesley DoCare for a long time. Now I've joined down here again.
Yeah. Hopefully you've still got a good life left.
I think so.
What would you like to do in the years that you've got left then?
Well, I would like to be better and more able to travel. Brenda loves travelling. She's just booked on a cruise up the Danube from Bulgaria through Romania to Vienna. I am so much in need of the right toilet and... my legs aren't too good. I'm not going.
Because
of my stroke issues.
Yes.
And I would love that to be better, because I do love travelling. I saw on the TV, on the internet, that Flight Centre had flights to Newcastle. Well, we hadn't been to Newcastle. I go around. I haven't told you about my postmark collection.
No.
I collect postmarks. And we hadn't been up the Hunter Valley Highway from Newcastle. At the end of the Hunter Valley Highway is a little village called Broke. So we went for Broke up the Hunter Valley Highway. We were there the day it was 42 degrees.
Whoa.
It was very hot.
That's hard for anybody to cope with. It would have been an additional difficulty for you with your condition then, wouldn't it?
Yes, but I had found on the internet places that had disabled
right.
friendly rooms, and that's right. where we stayed.
So one thing you can do in the future then is to choose carefully, but travel around Australia.
Yes, I can be a grand nomad, which I enjoy.
Oh, there's nothing wrong with that.
No,
not in
and I've got. I had a Ford Focus, and one day I spent half an hour trying to get out of it. It was too low to the ground, and my uncle. I've got one uncle left. He was with me. He said, "Simon, you need another car. I recommend a Nissan." So here I went and bought an X-Trail, swapped my Focus in for an X-Trail, and I can now get in and out of the X-Trail well. It works well.
Right car for the right situation.
Yes.
Simon, our time is almost up, and I think it would be really quite a positive way to end if maybe you could reflect on what's happened in your life, and because there are a lot of people out there, and sadly, the incidence of strokes are not uncommon.
Yes, it's quite a common condition.
It's quite a common thing. There might be people listening now who actually do feel as though I've had a stroke, my life is at an end, you know, or life is just too difficult to get on with now. What would you say to them if you were with them now?
Never, ever give in. But one thing I found really, really helpful was to get a case manager. A case manager is someone who looks after your interests. And mine came from the Melbourne City Mission. And he knew what was going on in Centrelink. Who knows what's going on in Centrelink? Very few people. And he knew that a new funding arrangement for that was provided by the government to help you stay at home, called Support and Choice. He signed me up for that. And that has been really helpful. They're still paying me an extra pension. And they help you look after the garden and things. They will pay for that. Now, my case manager knew about that, and because he was a semi-professional, he wasn't actually a doctor, but as a case manager, Centrelink took notice of him.
Yeah. Very practical advice, but I think I'd like to pick up also on the very first thing you said, which I think is more to do with our inner being, our souls, and that is you said, don't give up.
Yes, very important. Sometimes life can be very hard, and you think, why is my life so hard? But I then try and focus on the next good thing, the next ex-girlfriend's lunch that's coming or something. It's coming next Sunday week. Girls actually have asked me to do it again.
Simon, I think that is the most wonderful place for us to finish our talk. Thank you very much for being on Listen to Older Voices.
Listen to Older Voices is produced by Rob Greaves at the Melbourne Community Support Program. Listen to Older Voices is supported by financial assistance from the Commonwealth Government through the Commonwealth Home Support Program and is brought to you through the Community Radio Network.